Thank you for those of you joining us online. My name is Rocco Galati. I'm the Executive Director of the Constitutional Rights Center here in Toronto, Canada. And to my immediate right is Amina Shirazi, one of the operational co-directors who heads the Human Rights and Women's Issue Directorship here at the center. Also to my far immediate right are Christine Kolbeck and Amanda Forbes, who are officers and board members of Children's Health Defense Canada, which is a branch of an internationally renowned organization headed in the United States of America by Robert Kennedy Jr. and Mary Holland, President and Chief Legal Counsel of Children's Health Defense. I'm sure many of you are aware of this organization. They, along with Educators for Human Rights, which is a Ontario-based association of a group of concerned teachers in the school system, and 17 children through their parent litigation guardians, as well as three active teachers, have filed a notice of application in the Ontario Superior Court on April 20th. You can access a PDF copy of that notice of application by going to our Constitutional Rights Center website at Constitutional Rights Center. The rights is plural, the center is spelled the Canadian and not American way. It's re.ca. So that's constitutionalrightscenter.ca. It's on the front landing page. You can click the icon and you can access the notice of application, which runs 20 odd pages. In this challenge before the Superior Court, we challenge on various bases, various aspects of the COVID measures, and then focus in on how it impacts on children in the school system. We challenge the actual statutory authority for having called the emergency, which does not meet the statutory requirements. We challenge the constitutional validity of the measures imposed. With respect focusing, I'm not going to take you through the entire application, but I do want to focus on a couple of pages of it, which hone in and focus and highlight the challenge with respect to our school children. And so we seek a declaration that the measures of masking, social distancing, PCR testing, and lockdowns of schools in Ontario are, one, not scientifically or medically based, two, based on a false and fraudulent use of the PCR test using a threshold cycle of 43 to 45 cycles, in that once used above the 35 threshold cycles of all the positives, it registers 96.5% are false positive, resulting in an accuracy rate as a mere screening test of only 3.5%. By the way, the courts in Portugal, Austria, and Germany have found this to be a fact with respect to the PCR test based on the scientific evidence. We further seek that all measures of masking, social distancing, and school lockdown closures are a sole and direct result of the mounting or, quote, rising, quote, cases being cases which are 96.5% false positive in Ontario. We further seek a declaration that the PCR test in and by itself, as used, cannot distinguish between dead non-infectious versus live infectious virus fragments. We seek a further declaration that the solitary confinement and isolation and quarantine of asymptomatic children in their bedrooms for any duration without contact with any of their family members is abusive and constitutes violations of Section 7 and 15 of our Charter and the Constitution Act 1982, is violating the physical and psychological integrity contrary to Section 7 of the Charter, and further constitutes cruel and unusual treatment under Section 7 of the Charter, and further violates Section 7 of the Charter by way of international law under the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhumane, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment, and also contravenes the Convention on the Rights of the Child. We further seek a declaration that these measures are particularly egregious with respect to children with special needs suffering from physical and neurological disabilities, in violating Section 7 and 15 of our Charter, in that absolutely no particular or special provisions are made for them to accommodate their disabilities with respect to the COVID measures. We seek a further declaration that the science and preponderance of the scientific world community is of the consensus that, one, masks are completely ineffective in avoiding or preventing transmission of an airborne respiratory virus such as SARS/COVID-2, which leads to COVID-19. A further declaration that the prolonged use of masks results, especially for children, in irreparable physical, neurological, psychological, language development, and social development harms, some of which are irreversible. Further, that lockdowns, quarantine, and isolation are ineffective and cause more damage than they prevent. We seek a further declaration that the mandatory use of masks, isolation, and PCR testing violates the applicant's children's constitutional rights under 1 Section 7 of the Charter in infringing their rights to physical and psychological safety and integrity, as well as medical procedure or treatment without informed consent. 2, that Section 7 in infringing their rights to education, flowing from their right to education under the Education Act and further under Section 7 of the Charter as interpreted by the Canadian courts, as well as under Section 7 of the Charter by way of international law through the International Convention of the Rights of the Child, as read in, as minimal protection under Section 7 of the Charter, as enunciated inter alia by the Supreme Court in Baker, Hape, and the Federal Court of Appeal in the Gooseman. We seek further declarations that the notion of asymptomatic transmission from children to adults of an airborne respiratory virus is, quote, oxymoronic. That determination is from our PCR experts and our experts on the application, and that it's oxymoronic without scientific or medical basis and hitherto scientifically and medically unknown. A declaration that masking, social distancing, and testing in school settings, particularly elementary schools, is unscientific, non-medical, unlawful, and unconstitutional, and should be halted forthwith. A declaration that children do not pose a threat with respect to COVID-19 to their teachers. A declaration that teachers who do not wish to mask have the statutory and constitutional right not to mask. A declaration that the masking of children is unscientific, non-medical, physically, psychologically, neurologically, socially, and linguistically harmful to them, and that the masking of children be prohibited, regardless and despite their parents' requests and or directions, because as children, they have their own independent rights under the Education Act, Section 7, and Section 15, the Equality Section of our Charter, as well as Section 7 of the Charter, as read in and through the international law under the Convention of the Rights of the Child. So in a nutshell, what this application, which includes what we call personal interest standing applicants, that is the children through their parents and the teachers, as well as the two organizations, Children's Health Defense Canada and Educators for Human Rights, is we're seeking orders that the measures cease with all children, whether or not their parents want them masked and tested in the school setting, because they are public interest litigants, because we say that those parents are not acting in the best interest of their children in light of the overwhelming scientific and medical evidence. We're seeking an order that the schools be reopened. And with that, I'll turn it over to Amina, if you have anything to say.
I do want to say why we're bringing this application. The Ontario students who are supported by their parents, as well as Educators for Human Rights, an organization of educators, including teachers, retired teachers, educational assistants, and CECs. This application is being brought to the court, and the children are seeking this challenge because the closures and public health mandates in schools are unlawful, they are unwarranted, and they are unacceptable. They are unlawful because generally children have enshrined rights. They have right to protection from abuse, protection from neglect and harmful substances and procedures. They have a right to provision, provision for education, provision for healthcare, including mental health, and adequate standard of living. They have a right to participation. Children's views have been completely ignored. Their views matter. In addition to specific protections and provisions, there are for more vulnerable populations, such as Indigenous children and children with disabilities. All school mandates breach these basic fundamental rights of children, and they violate basic tenets of law and legal procedure in the manner in which that they were made. These mandates are also unwarranted, and they're unwarranted because children pose and have the lowest risk of infection, transmission, and serious illness or mortality. These measures are not evidence-based, and in fact, contrary to the mounting evidence over the past 14 months, and there is no data to support the mandates of closure of schools, which is unbiased and impartial and peer-reviewed. These measures are also unwarranted because there have been no assessments of the harms and effectiveness of the imposed measures. Both international and domestic law requires that when adults make decisions, they should think about how their decisions will affect children. All adults are legally required to do what is best for children. Yet, the very professions that are responsible for advocating for their rights have either contributed to eroding their rights or have remained silent. Governments who should make sure children are protected and looked after by their parents are instead promulgating policies which harm and expose them to risks. These mandates are also unacceptable, and they're unacceptable because they cause harm. They cause physical, psychological, and emotional harm to children, and they provide no benefit. We now have unequivocal evidence of the harms school closures and mandates within schools have caused. Domestic violence, child abuse and neglect, child suicide, and childhood mental disorders have all increased astronomically. Loss of learning and development has robbed children of their childhood. We have all failed our children, and it's time that we heard their voices. I'll now turn it over to...
We have Christine Kolbeck and Amanda Forbes from Children's Health Defense, and they'll be here along with us for questions with respect to those two organizations or any other questions for council. And when they're done, we're going to replace their seats with Josie Elliott and Angela Johnson, who are Josie Elliott is the representative for Educators for Human Rights, and Angela Johnson is one of the applicants on behalf of her children on this application. So if there's any questions from the media, we'll take them now.
Can you give it a second?
Yes. Scott from Internet News.
Yes, Scott.
Just wondering about the, due to the severity of what you guys are saying as far as the harm being done to kids, is there like an immediate injunction in this sort of declaration, or is it more of a long out process?
This is by way of application. We're not going to waste our time with trying to get interim injunctions. We're going to argue this on the merits as a final application. And I hope that scheduling for urgent matters, which this we consider, we will have a schedule and a hearing date by fall.
Just an S from Druthers. We just wanted to thank again everybody. It's not really a question. Speaking out on behalf of kids that are essentially lost their voice these days is absolutely incredible and vital for our future and for them.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Scott here again. One thing, just a lot of comments and people in support. And you did talk about the PDF, but how can people be supported? Definitely parents who want to get involved and really
right.
Push this through and make it noticed?
If you're a parent or a teacher or any citizen for that matter, anybody who is supportive of this challenge on behalf of these children, you go to the Constitutional Rights Center website. That's constitutionalrightscenter.ca. Under the big donate button, there are three other buttons that are designated for challenges we are currently conducting. One says school action. So if you want to donate to this this proceeding and this challenge by children, you just hit the school action. It'll take you to the donate page, and you could donate on that site. And
a question from the site, which school board is it?
Yes, we've enjoined as respondents, not just the premier, but also the medical health officers in all the jurisdictions where the children go to school. We've enjoined we've named the school boards, and we've also named principals and superintendents who have been absolutely fascistically refusing to follow even the government's guidelines, who have refused these children their rights over the course of the last year. So the school boards that we've named are the Toronto District School Board, the Durham District School Board,
and the Halton District
School Board. In Halton. If we're successful, of course, this proceeding or any order the court gives would apply across the province.
Question here. I heard you, I mean, you have personally filed against certain principals of schools. Does this mean other parents can also sort of file personally? Like these principals are personally liable.
Well, the personally named, yeah. We will be following this application by an action for monetary damages, which is a separate proceeding. We did not want to bog down and delay this proceeding in terms of declaratory and prerogative relief, injunctive relief, to wait for the long drawn out statement of claim. We will, in time, we're going to give the 60-day required notice to the Crown's office that we will be coming at them. These same people will be coming at them for damages on behalf of the damage that they've caused these children and the grief that they've caused to their parents and families because they did not respect the law.
Thank you. Question here. Can the province employ delay tactics prolonging these restrictions and lockdowns?
Well, that's par for the course for government, right? My father always used to say that if you want to make government, if you want to get rid of organized crime, turn them into a government agency. So, they'll try their best to delay it. We're going to push it along.
Thank you. Now, how long does it take for the case to go through court? Can you share some of the key timelines?
Well, I just did. We issued the notice. In the next 3 to 4 weeks, we'll be filing our evidence. I'll be seeking a date with motion scheduling court to iron out a schedule for the respondents to respond and a hearing date. And I'm hopeful I can get a hearing date in the fall.
Thank you.
As you know, in Ontario, as predicted by the center and everybody, we did not go back. The kids did not go back to school after the March break, and the kids are not going back to school in September. And as my prediction, it's quite clear that this government and the rest of the jurisdictions who are enforcing these COVID measures, like a kidnapper holding on to his ransom note, the teaching profession is going to be eliminated and replaced by robotic Mr. and Ms. Googles. And they can then solve their diversity issues because these robots are interactive. They're already in existence. So we're going to have the most diverse teaching staff in the history of the planet. We'll have Afro, South Asian, Chinese, Korean, transgender, teachers. And of course, they'll all be robots with no pay except to the internet conglomerates. But so this is where it's going. So teachers should understand that. I've told teachers this over various Zoom calls. There's a lot of teachers who are frantic and concerned, and you are not getting the message. They mean to eliminate you as a profession, and that's coming down the pike within 2 or 3 years for sure, at the latest.
There's a question here, just a general, simple question from educators. what can they do right now, considering what you just said? What can teachers and educators do at this moment?
Yeah, well, grow some courage. Come out, stand up. All I hear from teachers is, I'm afraid to give my name because I'm afraid for my career, my future career. Like, swallow, masticate, and digest this. You do not have a future career. They mean to eliminate you in the same way they eliminated bank tellers. You're familiar with bank tellers? How many bank tellers do you see now? 90% of the banking staff has been eliminated by automated artificial intelligence. That's in store for you.
With that said, there are a number of very brave teachers who are speaking out, most notably the applicants who've named themselves in the application. Right. But also, for every teacher that has named themselves, there are, I'm sure, hundreds of other teachers. And likewise, for every student that we've named in the application, there are hundreds of parents. And we will hear about this when we hear from both the Children's Health Defense and the Educators for Human Rights.
And the other thing teachers can do is make their views, if they're in line with these applicants' point of view, make their views known to their principal, their superintendent, and their school board. Don't be shy about it. Clamor. And if at any given time you have an inclination to organize and join in with our court proceedings, give us a call.
Question. In Ontario, I think there's no age defined for medical decision making. So can our kids decline PCR testing and vaccines on their own?
First of all, that's an error. There is an age. We have an age of majority. There is a doctrine in Canada called the mature minor doctrine, which is much abused, as set out by the Supreme Court of Canada. In very dire circumstances, let's say you're a 15-year-old and you're in a traffic accident and you're bleeding potentially to death and they can't get your parents' consent. The courts have recognized that in that instance of immediate physical harm or threat of death, a minor who can express their views can give consent, but not outside that context. This comes out of the Jehovah Witnesses cases on blood transfusions. The Supreme Court of Canada has very clearly warned to guard against abusing the notion of the mature minor doctrine. Age of majority is 18 in Ontario. Okay? Nobody is allowed to give consent under that age for any medical treatment unless it's to a doctor in the face of imminent grave bodily harm or death.
This might be maybe for teachers about knowing if they're planning on vaccinating in schools or has been talks of using schools as vaccination centers.
I don't know if Christine has any insight on that.
It hasn't been announced yet.
Okay, because they're doing it in California and other schools. So just out of that sort of force majeure in the aspect of like if they're doing it in schools,
right? We have to be very, very careful. We love America, but we are a different country, and that difference sometimes manifests itself. We have to be very careful not to take our cue from American law. In Canada, the Supreme Court of Canada and the appellate courts have resoundingly and clearly established the right to refuse any and all medical procedure or treatment without informed consent as part of our Section 7 Charter rights. That's liberty, life, liberty, and security of the person. The American courts have not established that constitutional right. Okay, so be very careful when you draw analogies from practices in the United States. Our law right now is you are not required or they cannot impose any mandatory medical procedure or treatment without your informed consent. And if you're a minor, that informed consent has to be from the parent. Again, the only exception to that is, and again, it comes out of the Jehovah Witnesses cases on blood transfusion. The Supreme Court said the only exception to that is if there's imminent danger of grave bodily harm or death, the court can be approached or the authority to supplant the informed consent of the parent if the parent is refusing and is is allowing or willing to let that child die. Our court has said no. The court can issue an order. And the reason for that is the same reason we're invoking in this application is, again, that children under our Constitution, it has been determined, have independent charter rights, even though they're children. And so no adult can take a charter right away from them, even if it's their parents, that's going to result in imminent harm or death. And we argued the seminal immigration case in 1999 on the best interest of the child in the immigration context and the Convention on the Rights of the Child. So we've been, myself and Amna Shirazi have been defending children's rights in that context for well over 20 years.
When parents drop off their children to a public school, parents are essentially handing over children to them. Now, how does the duty of care fit into this case?
Well, it's a long, that's a very complicated question. It's a very complicated question. In the good old days, and I don't say that just because I'm over 40, under the Education Act, the parents had what they call parents patriae jurisdiction. Legally, once the child was dropped off to the school, the parents legally had the same obligations and rights over the children. They were the parents for the day. Over the course of the years, the unions lobbied successfully to take that out. Simply put, the teachers didn't want the responsibility as if they were parents, and so they now take the position they're in a contractual obligation, and the only duty of care that teachers feel they have is negligence, the law of negligence, okay? Mm-hmm. But they do not have the old duty of care of being in the position of the parents.
Thank you. A lot of parents are very concerned about the manipulation and the coercion of kids about the vaccine and the injection. Now, is there anything that we can do to fight this?
Well, go ahead. You want to talk about this, Amina?
I think vaccines are not within the scope of this application in particular. That is something that we are pursuing through other actions
litigation and other
litigation. So
yeah,
probably better addressed through there.
And the other thing I say as well, that may be one view, but, you know, every parent has the right to, you know, whether I personally agree with it or not, if the parents are consenting to the vaccines, and then although I personally feel they're misguided and unscientific, it's an emergency. I'd put vaccine in quotation mark, but there's very little you can do if parents want their children to take the vaccine, barring hard data on spiked serious deaths with children as a result of vaccines. Up to now, the children have not been vaccinated, so.
Right.
Could you maybe make a comment on that? They haven't been vaccinated and they haven't been tested on, essentially. None of the clinical trials, as far as I understand, included children under 12, between 12 and 18.
I'm not up on that. Okay. That's my understanding too, but I haven't. I haven't dived into that particular question.
But I hear most recently that Health Canada has become the first country to approve vaccines in children.
Yes.
And that there are clinical trials with children as young as 6 months old.
That's, you know, when the science emerges on the nature of these vaccines, that could be the subject of a future proceeding, because to me, they're experimenting, they're medically experimenting with this vaccine, and that's a crime against humanity. The unfortunate thing in Canada, other countries are different. In Canada, to lay a charge of a crime against humanity, the Attorney General of Canada has to personally consent to the prosecution. And of course, no minister of our crown, no minister of the government is going to prosecute his friends for committing these crimes. It is, in my view, and not personal view, in my view as a lawyer, it's a crime against humanity to be experimenting on the population. These so-called vaccines did not go through the proper safe protocol, and therefore they are experimenting. But as Amina said, vaccines have no play in this application. We want to reopen the schools. We are dealing with masking, PCR. We're calling into question the efficacy of the PCR testing used as a fraudulent political tool, and the damage that it's causing. The COVID school measures are causing irreparable harm. Kipling said something that everybody accepts. Give me the boy till he's seven, and I will give you the man. So they're going to prolong this for 3 or 4 years. And if you start school at four, and I was a clinical linguist before I became a lawyer. I can tell you we're hardwired for language. They are literally, in addition to the mRNA vaccines, are literally altering the composition of this generation mentally, neurologically, to the point of a criminal level, right? So if you're four and you start masking, 4 years later, you're eight or nine, your brain is hardwired no later than 9 years of age. We know that.
And also, there's no sound legal or no sound medical evidence for why children should be subjected to any of these measures. There was a hot off the press peer-reviewed study that just was published in the Journal of Infection titled Lower Households Transmission Rates for SARS-CoV-2 from Children Compared to Adults. And it supports the existing evidence that children are not only less likely to develop severe disease, but are also less likely susceptible and less likely to transmit SARS-CoV-2. So in light of this evidence, why do we need these mandates for children, and why do we need to have coercive vaccines that are not even approved according to the standards that all medicine has to be approved? So it's experimental and it's very dangerous.
So we have a question from more concerned parents, and perhaps maybe anyone else wants to weigh in. So our kids' teachers are speaking to them about the importance of getting the shot and telling them when they leave school, you know, make sure you book your appointment. And actually some teachers are not allowing work to be submitted back to them due to risk. How do parents address this?
Well, first of all, to advocate, I'm sorry, yeah. On a legal basis, yeah. To advocate for teachers advocating that children be vaccinated and come back vaccinated, it's not only reprehensible, it's illegal and is actionable. It's not their role to give medical advice. And in fact, it's a form of practicing medicine without a license, right? And if they attach any conditions, it's extortion. That should not be happening. It's not their role, it's not their place. And they should be sued if they do so.
Mm-hmm. To piggyback on that, Rocco, for more concerned parents, what is a call to action that families could organize as an effort within their local communities that they can do to stop all this madness? We understand teachers are less likely to speak out given their job. But for parents, what can we actively do in our community?
I'll turn that over to my clients. I'm not an organizer or lobbyist. I'm a lawyer. And that's, I'm a one-trick pony. Okay, so maybe my clients may want to answer that if they have a view on that.
Well, to go back just one question before, the one thing that I can offer to that parent or any parents who are being coerced to take vaccines by teachers and their children, my recommendation is you print out a copy of the Ontario Healthcare Consent Act and you highlight Section 11 where it says the elements of consent, which are, they include the consent must be voluntary, and the consent must be informed. Highlight that and educate your teachers that they have no rights to, you can send them the whole charter, but that's a lot for them to read. So the Ontario Healthcare Consent Act, if you're in Ontario, print it out, send it to your teachers and educate them that this is not their place and there's laws in place that prevent them from doing this with the children. And then the other thing you can do is get out and support the teachers who are fighting for your children. There's a group that is going to come on, their Educators for Human Rights is the name of the group. They're going to give you more information about that. You can get out and support them. They do have rallies. They are speaking out for your children. There's a very large organized group of teachers who absolutely oppose a lot of these measures. And so these are some actionable things that you can do right now is get out and support. And I always say, get the kids involved, get your kids to make signs, go to these rallies and let the kids have their voice, because that's the one thing they're missing. So they can put on their sign, their thoughts, their feelings, their voice, and they can get out there and publicly state that. And that's their right to do. And that is also under the charter, a protected right for the children and for you, and get out and support your teachers and work together. This is something we have to come together on.
Perhaps at this point, we might bring Jose and Angela in if they have a view or an answer to that, Educators for Human Rights and one of the applicant parents, Angela.
This is an honor to be here today as a representative of our growing group of educators who are rising in support of the children and each other. We value the human rights of each individual, and as such, we've developed our mission statement, which is the following: to uphold our duty of care and protect the inherent rights, human rights of students, families, and educators, to defend the right of every child to quality in-person public education, free from all forms of discrimination, to put children first, lockdowns, school closures, mask mandates, physical distancing, chemical sanitizers, and messages of fear hurt children. Let children be children in a safe and inclusive environment that balances their physical and mental health. And finally, to respect each individual's bodily integrity and freedom of choice when it comes to health and medical intervention. It's often been said that with rights comes responsibility. Our view is that protecting our human rights is our responsibility.
Thank you, Josie. My name is Angela Johnston, and I am an educator, and today I'm here as a parent, as a plaintiff in this application. And I became involved in this because I was very concerned that the measures that were being imposed on our children in the schools were not safe, were not effective, and in my view, were not necessary. And I've heard from and spoken to countless students and teachers and parents, and just devastating stories of the effects of these measures on our children in the schools. And I had to speak out, and I couldn't allow it to continue. And we wanted to organize action and push back against the schools and protect our children and our students.
Are there any more questions?
So far, we're okay.
I just have a question for the parents and just like some of the site, like some of the things they've seen as far as like trying not to wear masks or any bullying or the psychological aspect of going to school.
I could go on for hours, but I again have spoken with many parents who have submitted medical documentation from their doctors as to why their children shouldn't be wearing masks, myself included. I've submitted two notes from two separate doctors, and the school is denying my children's exemptions as well. I've spoken to parents whose children are suffering physically, emotionally, developmentally, psychologically, in terms of not only the masking, but the chemical sanitizers, the mess, constant fear programming in terms of conditioning children to believe that they are dangerous and they're vectors of disease and they could kill people just by being in contact with them and breathing. So again, countless stories of many, many different children who are being harmed in so many different ways that we believe are long-term as well.
Perhaps I can, I'm sorry, we're playing musical chairs here, but bring Christine back for a final word from Children's Health Defense.
So I just wanted to mention that, Children's Health Defense, that we are a federally registered not-for-profit organization, and we're devoted to advocating for and promoting the optimal physical and mental health of all Canadian children. In this legal action, Children's Health Defense are representing and supporting thousands of children without voices, especially those children from marginalized families who are most disproportionately affected from losing their primary support system when schools repeatedly closed. Children's Health Defense has been contacted by thousands of extremely concerned parents regarding the negative impacts of the school measures and the government lockdowns their children are experiencing. The guidelines have been inconsistent between public health, school boards, unions, and politicians. They all have different recommendations, resulting in children as young as 3 to 6 years old being forced to wear masks for 6+ hours a day, both indoors and out, in order to attend schools. Parents are reporting that some children with mask exemptions are not allowed to participate in activities, or they're forced to sit alone in the back of the class beside an open window in the middle of winter. Singing and speaking are banned, and playground equipment is closed. Everything that cannot be sterilized has been stripped from the classrooms. There are no pictures on the walls. Carpets have been removed and now look like prisons full of plexiglass and floor stickers. Children are taught to bully and snitch on each other for mask infractions, and they're being told they can kill grandma if they do not comply with the measures. Many parents have advised me that they have written medical exemptions, as Angela pointed out, from their children stating they cannot safely wear masks, and yet school officials are refusing to honor these mask exemptions. This means that non-medical school personnel are requiring children to wear masks against medical advice. Mask mandates are preventing school children from developing language skills, especially hard on special needs children, ESL children, French first language children, and young children. Parents frantically call me, begging daily for my help because their children as young as 8 years old have become so depressed, they told their parents they wanted to die, and some have attempted suicide. Sadly, most mental health professionals are only able to help them through video chat online counseling sessions. So the guidelines, when the schools have closed, thousands of Ontario children have lost access to vital breakfast and lunch programs. And for some kids, that was their only meal of the day. And tragically, many children are now being left home alone on a computer for hours while parents have to go to work. The Ontario government and the school officials will be held responsible in a court of law for the egregious and irreparable harms they are inflicting on our most precious and vulnerable population.
Christine, there's a question for you. Someone just wants to know, can you tell us the section again from the Ontario Healthcare Consent Act?
Section 11.
Section 11, thank you. That's all.
Well, if there are no more questions, as you can see in our environment, how much everyone was advised of this press conference, how much our mainstream media cares about children, that they're not present. They have been and turned out to be a propaganda mouthpiece for public health officers. And we have public health officers running the country, literally, and abusing our children. And this is how much the media cares about our children.
Question for Christine, and where you said people are personally liable, I'm just wondering how to bring this to these people's attention. So if it is people in the school giving medical advice, how can another parent serve these people? Or maybe it could be a wrong question, but more, how can other parents take action against teachers or other people giving medical advice? Just the section showing section 11?
Well, yeah, you can educate the teachers with section 11. You can also file complaints within the school with the principal. Start there. Always start with the teacher, of course, and then go to the principal. And then do you have a school board? You have a superintendent? You can contact all of those. And if that results in nothing, then you can obviously go higher than that, file human rights complaints, gather with groups of your own community. Grassroots is one of the best ways to reach other people in your communities. There was actually in my son's school, there was just a survey this past week, and we could all see each other's answers, but they were anonymous. And I could not believe how many people agreed that we should all end the lockdowns, send the children back to school without the measures. It's majority. We are not in the minority anymore.
And I think those parents need to make that opinion known loudly and clearly to the school officials and the medical health officers.
Yeah. And what this case is highlighting is that those parents are actually echoing the most recent peer-reviewed medical literature that we have. And it's the public health that is not reading that. It's the public health policies, which are not sound, but it's rather the parents' positions, which are sound, and the foundation is unequivocal medical evidence and data that supports that lockdowns don't work, that masks are ineffective and harmful, that the cost to humanity in general, but children in particular, far outweigh any benefits, which are completely marginal. There was recently just a paper published, a Canadian publication from Simon Fraser University called COVID Lockdown Cost Benefits. And it reviews almost 100 articles and journals and studies with respect to what the costs have been and the harms have been, and the fact that there have been no benefits to lockdown. So the public health officials, hopefully through this case and through the voices of the litigants, will finally turn their attention to the surmounting evidence on the harms of lockdown and the ineffectiveness of lockdowns.
And our former chief medical officer, Dr. Chabas, has been very public and very loud in saying that these school measures are indefensible and unwarranted and should be removed, that we do not need and should not be imposing these measures in the school system.
But they are right now. So what is the government following? Why are they in place then?
Well, you need to ask them.
Yeah.
Journalists need to do their jobs and ask the government. They're not asking the government. They're not asking these questions. Where are you getting your science? Why don't you reveal your science? Why are we not having an open scientific debate? The journalists are not. Why? Well, most of them have been bought. Trudeau has given $500 million to every private news service, the four of them, and gives $1.5 billion to CBC. Well, as you know, in another proceeding, we have sued CBC for being their Pravda mouthpiece. But the journalists need, at these scrums with the premier, ask those questions. Why are they not asking?
Because these are not public health policies based on sound evidence. These are public health assumptions. And now, a year later, the assumptions have been all refuted. So policy is not reflecting reality.
This is not policy, it's politics for vested interests, for vested socioeconomic interests of billionaire oligarchs and institutions. It's clear, that's obvious, you know? And that's why our politicians and our medical health officers should get an Oscar for playing deaf, dumb, and blind. But they're obstinate and they're fascistic in their refusal to answer questions in a constitutional democracy.
Thank you. Guys, how can parents work with other parents to petition to open schools back for in-person learning? Is that possible?
Yes, parents can reach out to us through childrenshealthdefense.ca. We have a website. You can reach out to us. We have many parents who are working together. We've been involved with other groups working collaboratively to write letters to politicians, to school boards, to health officials, things like that. So definitely reach out to childrenshealthdefense.ca and we can put you in contact with a lot of other families who are supporting the legal case and who are working together to try and make changes within the schools and within our province and our country.
Thank you.
Okay. So this was scheduled to 10:30. So unless there's any other questions, I just want to thank everybody for attending. Again, you can go to the two websites, the constitutionalrightscenter.ca and Christine's website, and get your information on this challenge here. We'll be updating as the case proceeds. Thank you very much.
Thank you. These are yours.